Welcome back to Rain on Your Parade with J.L. Covan. I'm J.L. Covan, here as always with the voice of God, Producer Mike. Hello, Producer Mike.
I like this position so much better. I'm out of the crosshairs. I'm living my private life in my now public apartment since we're putting it on YouTube. Yep. But man, oh man, is it good to be back and off the camera?
Yeah. Pants would be nice, but okay.
Oh, stop it.
I
am wearing pants.
I learned something. I think, you know, there are little signs that friends can give you where you realize what they think of you. Like, oh, you must think I'm stupid.
Let's hear this.
Or something. Well, I have a new rule.
Yeah.
You can tell how dumb you are, how dumb your friend thinks you are, by how long they press their button to let you into their building.
Was I too long or too short?
Mike's was still ringing when I left last week. I don't know if, you know, the ghost of Stephen Hawking comes and visits and it requires sort of a super long, but it's, I'm like halfway up the third floor and it's like, eh. So, but thank you. I am getting older. I do labor up these stairs like Clemenza at the end of The Godfather. I am getting fatter and fatter and weaker every day.
Why don't you tell that girl you love her?
don't worry, everybody. I know you've been missing Godfather 3 references, and we're going to bring them. Don't you worry. But this episode will be fun. I want to share some stuff with the people first, of course. August 1st, I got a show in Newark, New Jersey. August 7th, Astoria, New York. That's a Trump show. That's the Making Podcasts Great Again live show. Those are always a lot of fun. And then August 23rd, I am in St. Catharines, Ontario, doing both the show as myself and Trump as a benefit for this organization in Canada that's raising money for Ukraine. So, yeah, I have a lot of Canadian fans. I have a lot of people I know in New York. I expect poor ticket sales at all three. So thank you in advance, everybody. Lastly, I have a Patreon. Sorry, got to make the plug. A lot of good stuff there, folks. A lot of good stuff. It's only $3 a month. So good way to support me, support this show, and get extra stuff. I don't skimp on the extra content. So following up last week, a lot of people have asked me if I'd heard about the job that I had applied, the representing indigent tenants in the Bronx fighting eviction. And because it's not comedy related, of course I have good news. I got the job. So when I got the email that I had the job, I'm not going to pretend like I had some big weepy moment, but it did feel like Andy Dufresne after he's crawled through metaphorically 22 years of shit and breaks out of the pipe and is washed in the rain of freedom. That's kind of how it felt. It felt like this is my opportunity to escape for a good reason, not just helping people, but making more money than I make on average as a comedian. My only travel will be a commute to my home borough and not to another country or another state to sweat bullets if I've broken even. So it felt very good to get that job. And now I'm like nervous. Mike, you can probably relate to this a little bit, like unwarranted anxiety. I'm just like nervous that it's gonna like, they already know I do comedy. I talked about all that in the interview, but you just start going like, oh, but what if funding dries up? What if all of a sudden they're just like, actually, we made a mistake? Like, I, until I'm like filling out the forms, yeah, and like going to work, I'm still a little anxious. And I think that's because that whole week last week, waiting to hear, I was just like, let me get out of this, please. Not the job, comedy.
Yeah.
Like,
this. Welcome to the state of mind, a healthy state of mind.
I have to do some cameos when I get home. But yeah. It is. My big problem, my big beef with comedy, I think, and there's so many things wrong with it, increasingly wrong. I mean, we are at the, like climate change, we are at the beginning awfulness of what's coming with art and comedy. We're only at the beginning where people are telling me to collaborate with hacks and if I've seen AI stuff that's really good, and it's only going to get worse than it is now. We are at the this is the least worst the climate and comedy are going to be going forward. And I just feel like I've put so much into comedy. I've contributed. I know this sounds a little highfalutin, but I've contributed so much more to art and comedy in my own way than I've ever gotten back from fans, friends, the industry. And at some point, the thanklessness of it is one thing, because you can just sort of say, I don't do this for the adoration, or I do a little bit, just like I do a little bit of it for money. But it's really about making good things and feeling like there's some valid purpose to making what I'm making. And as I see the landscape, it's going to feel less and less valid and less rewarded than it already does. As we further condition people to consume content and not enjoy art. And I'm going to keep doing it because I hate myself, but now I'm far limited in my ability to do it. Oh, I would go to the middle of Pennsylvania to get then a hate message in my spam from some trash bucket of humanity in Harrisburg, PA, but I can't because I have a job. And then that pays me enough, and now I can not feel like I have to strive and fight some invisible force for the good of art. The good of art is dead. So rejoice, everybody. Like, I am Joe Pantoliano, or whatever his name is in the Matrix.
Joey ignorance is bliss.
Yeah, just eating the blue pill and going, I don't, because there's no, and obviously, you always have to give the disclaimer to some who take it personally. If you're watching this, if you come to shows, if you listen to my other things, if you pay me money for anything, anywhere, I'm not talking about you. But I have one of the worst ratios of fan/followers to engaged in the history of the world. So doing something worthwhile, making myself feel valuable, serving a community and people who need it, getting better health insurance so I'm not searching for a neurologist to figure out why my hand keeps cramping up like I'm dying. True story, everybody. It's related to a cervical spine injury. So what you're witnessing now also, like comedy, like climate change, you're witnessing the least worst version of me going forward. It's going to be brutal going forward, everybody. But I wanted to, that's pretty helpful way to kick off the show.
It's for this show, by this show standards. Yeah, yeah. I think so. Yeah.
Dark comedy, better than darkly depressing. but I've been enjoying, seeing a lot of different people now. The main topic today, as you know, from the, very creatively done, I'm assuming, JPEG from Mike, is the Epstein files.
Hmm.
But before we get to that, what I've been enjoying seeing online and seeing is this buyer's remorse. This, hey man, I didn't vote for ICE raids on farmers, for hardworking people to get scooped up, for deficits to be huge. I didn't vote for all that. I voted for a fictitious version of Donald Trump that never existed, that helped me sleep well at night because I didn't want to vote for the black lady. That's what I voted for. And I was seeing, obviously, a viral clip of Andrew Schultz, the very popular podcaster. And disclaimer, I'm not one of those people who's going to be like, oh, the bro comic who's not going to be a fan. I think he's a very funny stand-up comedian. I don't like everything he does, but he's an incredibly quick wit. I have watched specials of his that I went in, and I'm pretty good at this, Mike. Sorry, this isn't quite comedy talk yet, but this is comedy talk adjacent.
Yep.
This doesn't count towards my running time of comedy talk at the end of the episode.
You pulled a real slick trick. You're splitting it up. You're front-loading half of it.
Like the way they're going to do with, we're only cutting Medicaid after the midterms.
Yeah.
I still got my health care. Trump people, I vote for them. Hey, what happened to my health care? did the blacks get it? Anyway, so I'm not going to be like, oh, the bro comedians. No, talented comedian, incredible career he has built. That said, it's very funny when I see the kind of, I didn't vote for this, like rattling off all the disappointments he's had.
Yeah.
And this is what I would say. I said this on a different podcast, but I think you might appreciate this. I like it when Trump slaps the black sect off of white dudes on the internet. That's when you know it got real. Because whether it's the Matt Rife, the Andrew Schultz, the early 2000s Justin Timberlakes, take your pick.
Yeah.
It's just like, bro, here's my endorsement of Trump in before the election. Okay, we're going to role play. I'm going to be a super popular white podcaster who likes Jordans. Bro, for real, bro. I'm like watching like the energy, bro, right? You know what I'm saying? Like when you're walking down the street, like some bitch isn't going to want to watch you like wearing a Kamala Harris t-shirt, right? Right, yeah. No, I'm not, like, nobody's feeling that. So I'm like about Trump because he's a pussy, bro. Like, who's more black? Obama? Yeah, Obama. Or Trump, who fucking bitches, lying, flashing jewelry and money, bro. Am I right? Fast forward 6 months. Am I the stupid one? Because this is not what I voted for. I voted for lowering deficits and getting criminal aliens out of my country. Not this! This is an outrage! I feel like I have been fooled. It reminds me of Justin Timberlake and, you know, Janet Jackson. It was like, hey, come on, get the back. I'm copying your brother. Here's your titty. 2 weeks later, I am shocked at what happened. I am so disgusted at what I had no idea. And it's really, I apologize, and I'm so sorry. Please don't hurt my career. So, Donald Trump has that capability. He has that capability to whiplash white people back into full whiteness.
Yeah.
So I just think it's one of these things that we do in this country where, I think the same thing of slavery. I think the same thing of Jim Crow. Like, I'm putting Trump into that category where it's like, yeah, nobody knew slavery was bad except all the people at the time who were against it.
Yeah.
And I don't get me wrong. I don't judge Abe Lincoln by 2025 standards, but by 1865 standards, that's a pretty fucking heroic dude.
Yeah.
But there were plenty of people. John Adams, Hamilton, anybody, yeah. Thank you. What comes next? John Adams was like anti-slavery.
Yeah.
He was a fat, angry white dude in the 1700s, so yeah. He knew. So it's like this idea of, like, I didn't know. Everything Donald Trump did leading up to now, he has been telegraphing this. But you didn't want to believe that because you wanted to justify choosing him. So you kind of create a false Trump in your mind that you could vote for, and a false Kamala Harris that you could never vote for. Mm. And then when Trump ends up being exactly what half the country said he would be, what his own words and his own Project 2025 said he would be, it's like, whoa, I didn't vote for that. Well, he ran on that, so I don't know why you didn't vote for that. Hauling fucking oats. I can't vote for that. No. Yes, I can do. It's ridiculous. It's like so, and to me, there's only two things I would say. Either, oh, I shouldn't listen to you anymore for commentary or for thoughts or for like anything beyond goofy laughs. It's time for you to then just go Theo Vaughn or something, you know, although even he reaches into that space. And like Theo Vaughn benefits so much from that, like, and it happens on the left and the right. If you sound like a hillbilly piece of shit and say anything that isn't the dumbest, what? He's making some points. So I don't know, but I saw a bomb land on a baby's head in Gaza, and I'm like, not really cool with that. Whoa, when you lose Theo Vaughn, I didn't think I'd be agreeing with Theo Vaughn today. Theo Vaughn, when Theo Vaughn is the voice of reason, you've lost the plot. It's like, oh, is that the low bar? I should do that. I sometimes want to reinvent myself. I know I just got a job helping people. I'm really happy about that.
You literally just quit 10 minutes ago.
I'm back. JL's back. I sometimes wish I had the freedom to just be like, I'm going to disappear for 2 years and go, like my fans. I'm going to disappear for 2 years and all of a sudden just reinvent myself as like a Southern, like, hey, y'all, I don't know about y'all, but snap. I know some poor people who need their food. Wow. Wow. It's going to be a landslide for Democrats because even filthy trash is making sense. That's the liberal perspective. While the right is like, you race traitor. But I just think at this point, how can you take somebody seriously? And we allow it. We allow it in the discourse. We just kind of go, hey, he's lost so-and-so. And I always want to flip it. I go, why did we care who the fuck he had in the first place? Like, if you can be duped by Donald Trump, then you don't have a position that we have to sort of say, we've got a list. Like, and I include Rogan in this. Wow. Wow. That is crazy. That is crazy. Donald Trump is as bad as the left predicted. Exactly. I still wouldn't have voted for Kamala Harris, though. Okay, don't cut my dick off. I still wouldn't have voted for Kamala Harris. We're cool? Okay. No, but wow, he's like the worst president ever and an even worse person than the left said. Wow. But trust me, I would never vote for Kamala Harris. I wouldn't even go that far. Crazy. So I'm just saying, if you've got to listen to a comic, a thought leader, a podcaster, you're in the right place. Because I've always been on the right side of everything. Everybody. But yeah, we'll come. That's it. That's just the opening shots. Do we have a graphic for that? JL's opening hot takes. please, too much talking.
Yeah, my bad. Sorry.
So when we come back, we're going to talk the Epstein files. Ooh.
And we're back. Mike, how was that break?
Pretty good. We fixed some technical things behind the scenes that I probably could have gotten up in the middle of recording to fix. But, you know, we did it during the break.
People are going to start to think we did like a One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest on you. Like, you were Randall Patrick McMurphy and I'm Chief. And like, I lobotomized you. And you're
why?
Because like, you're laughing. It's better. But that was your worst back from break comment ever.
Well, listen, I've told you, I'm shifting away. I'm getting worse and worse on the mic as I become a regular person. This is going to happen to you, JL.
I don't think it is.
The minute you take that job in the Bronx.
Can I tell you why?
Why?
Because I like being the funny guy in an office.
Okay. Like, I have no office. That's why I'm in big trouble. This is the first time I've spoken today.
Oh, good. Well, you sound fresh.
Thanks.
So let's talk the Epstein files, guys. When are they going to be released? People want to know. I kind of don't care. I'm like a lot of Democrats. I'm of the mind of like, hey, if it comes out like evidence of men abusing children, then throw them away. The end. No controversy there. It's like, what if Bill Clinton was having sex with kids? Then fuck him.
Yeah.
I don't understand why people. That's once again the projection of the right. We're like, well, what would you say if Bill Clinton? He's not my like uncle or father. Like, I'd be like, fuck him. Created a lot of jobs, did a lot of damage. Bad dude, get out.
Yeah.
That's it. That's like the end of the story. There's no like, well, what if this? It's but the right has to kind of do that. And they've, to me, this has illustrated. And I understand why some people in kind of the left wing and the anti-Trump space are like keeping the story going, because it really is working at unnerving Trump and getting some of his supporters like riled up and foaming at the mouth. But of course, they're blaming Pam Bondi. They're like, they can't blame Trump. And you realize what an echo chamber has been created, because it's like, well, whether you think it's Democrats and others? How do you not know at this point? How sheltered are you that you haven't seen Trump and Epstein dancing and taking photos together? And like, how sheltered are you that you don't know that? Right? That, I think that's just so bizarre, because I'm like, this is very common knowledge. Like, are you in a cave? It's almost like people are in mental caves. Forget silos or news streams. That's like, and they, but they're so, it's conflicting with their two cult things, the conspiracy theory and Trump worship.
Mm.
And they're coming closer and closer to being a problem. So right now they're like, well, there is a slightly older woman we can blame for everything right now. Thank God he put a woman as attorney general. We can blame the shit out of her. So people are like, she's got to resign. And I'm like, this is an underqualified sack of shit, Pam Bondi. She is, you know, Donald Trump had to promote single A and double A ball.
Rewind the tape. That's a baseball, almost baseball.
Edit that, and Ray. Oh my God, we went baseball. The show went full baseball. But basically, Trump promoted single A players to major leagues, and she's one of those people. She has no business being the attorney general, ethically or professionally. But yet she's now, they've gone already. She's been in the job 6 months, and they're like, Bondi's got to go. They're just done with her. She's been nothing but a rubber stamp lapdog for Donald Trump. And they're like, nope, done, go. Fuck her. I'm sure she's being called the C word and other things on like right wing media, because they have to, now they're more desperate. It's kind of a similar thing to the energy that was put into the anti-trans sports movement. It's like, we're losing our big targets and our big aims, so we have to go psychotically huge on small groups of people, like disproportionate, but like groups of, like violence and hate. And Pam Bondi is now getting that at the, like, Pam Bondi's, she's what stands between us and the secrets of the rich cabal. And the truth is, obviously, that it's that Donald Trump, whatever bad things were done on Epstein Island, maybe Bill Clinton was part of it. Maybe Donald Trump was part of it. Prince Andrew seems to have definitely been part of it. I don't know if I have to put a probably on that. But like, I'm sure there were lots of bad people involved in this shit. And yet it's this, I find it very telling about the modern right that this is their, like, somebody said it was going to be his Katrina.
Mm.
And I said, and like Katrina, Republicans won't care. Because, like, yes, it was bad.
That's so interesting. That's so true.
Katrina was bad for Bush, but he was in his second term, and a bunch of black people died who probably voted Democratic. I mean, it, of course, is a bad stain on his legacy, but, you know, a stain that he then goes to sleep in every night in his mansion. So
when you think about it in comparison to the Iraq War, it's like,
yeah,
it's kind of a blip in a lot of ways.
Yeah. You know? And it's aged well for him, because Kanye, you don't want to be on right. Kanye's side. Like, Kanye made the big statement, George Bush doesn't care about black people. And George Bush is like, you want to still cite Kanye as your moral hero?
Yeah.
So good for George Bush. He wins that one.
Yeah.
He play the long game, like we said for Bibi Netanyahu last week. That's the key. Just keep tripling down on that. And you'll eventually win in this world. As it was said in The Last Action Hero, the very underrated Arnold Schwarzenegger
movie,
Charles Dance, better known now as Tywin Lannister on Game of Thrones, because in this world, the bad guy wins. Like, summing up, you know, that's why he wanted to get out of movies. He always lost in the movie. And then in real life, he was like, I win.
Yeah.
Kind of, it was, you know what it was? It was Ken in Barbie before Ken and Barbie.
Mm.
You know, like the reversing, leaving the Barbie world and finding out, oh, the real world is chauvinistic and patriarchal. But I think it says a lot about the right. Like, they are obsessed with this story because they have this kind of odd desire to be hero to children. And when I say odd desire, of course, we want to protect our kids. We want kids to be safe. Yes. But there's this, like, wannabe action hero vibe about the right, where they just want it to be like, nah, feeding poor kids is boring. Like, making sure kids have good schools and are safe, like that. Guns out of the school too much. But if I can rescue kids out of a pizza shop basement with a gun, that's, they want John Wick safety for children. But the real safety for children, the real health of children, is slow, boring, hard, sacrificial work. And they're like, communists want free lunches for kids. Fuck that. I just
Who's paying for that?
Yeah. I just want to root out imaginary cabals in like foreign islands. It's I think it says so much, like, and it speaks to Trump. I think they do line up. The conspiracies, the right, and Trump all line up in that they are more concerned with the branding of an issue than the issue. Because guns, no offense, and Jeff Epstein clearly was a piece of shit. Donald Trump, sorry, clearly a piece of shit. Bill Clinton, very, very possibly a piece of shit. But what I would say is, but if all Bill Clinton did was like cheat with adult women, that's, you know, a much less, that's a morally bad thing to do, but it's not what we're talking about here. That's why I give him the maybe. But Trump with the big, beautiful bill, it's all one and the same of like, I want the fastest, quickest, splashiest way to do good, which will almost always also be the most insignificant. And now if you were a dummy and you're listening to this show, you're going, I'm sorry, stopping sex trafficking is dumb. No, the emphasis and the like numbers that you people believe in. It's like, did you know over 6 billion children were sex trafficked last year, Mike? Really? That math seems off. I'm not quite sure. And I'm exaggerating for the purposes of making the point. Yes. But that's what it's always. It's like there are over 93. So it's always some insane number. I go, so like every kid was sex trafficked 1.5 times last year. That seems like a lot, right wing. But it's a chance to be a hero. And I think the Epstein files represent, as disingenuous as I think plenty of right wing people are, I think the Charlie Kirks and the Tucker Carlsons of the world are actors. They are indecent, immoral actors. They are pretending to be patriots. They are pretending to care about people. They are making tons of money. That's their mission. But there must be some good meaning, well-intentioned people on the right, for whatever reason they've got caught up in this. And it's a chance to be a hero. Because what Trump represents to so many people, especially white people, remember when we ran things? Remember when we were the heroes and you didn't have to have diversity and you didn't have a black president? And we were just, people just knew how things were. And I could wake up every day and just go, I'm white. I'm part of the good guys. I'm the man. Like, I go to work and I have a chance to be the guy. I can become the boss. I can fuck that chick. I'm the guy. I'm white. And somewhere along the line, it became, you're just a guy. You're not the guy. You're just a guy. And this other guy might also get an opportunity to be the guy. And that's when a lot of people in this country went, hold up for a second. What do you mean? He can be the guy. He doesn't look like me. So, and she definitely doesn't look like me. So what the fuck is going on right now? Like, what is happening right now? Do I even have a country? And so they concoct these like elaborate conspiracies with elements of truth, of course. Like, you have to have elements of truth to make them palatable. Jeffrey Epstein was an abusive creep. And did lots of shady things. And we already know somebody like Prince Andrew seems to be, you know, I'm most comfortable throwing him under the bus because his own family, like, stopped talking to him. Mm. And they've done some shit.
The royals?
Yeah. Right? Like, that's...
See, India.
Yeah. So, to me, it's like, this is providing them an opportunity for this fake heroism that they're clinging to. Because nobody wants, and I'm sorry if this seems mishmashy right now, listeners or viewers, but the thesis behind this, what I think the Epstein files represent, is you have various things happening at once. You have a segment of the population feeling like they used to be part of the heroes just by existing. Maybe today isn't the day you get the girl or you get the promotion, but your buddy got the promotion last week and you're up next and you know how this works and I'm fucking my secretary, but my wife stays with me for the kids, so it's all good. So you've lost your like personal vision of like being a hero in America, your small version. And Trump comes to you and gives you the, I can make us all heroes. Like a fucked up version of David Bowie. We can be heroes if you're not a chick or a person of color. And so he represents this like, oh, he'll do it. Then there's this lack of attention span that I've harped on with phones and with the way we consume things. If Donald Trump said to you, in 30 years, I'll have you back in that C-suite, fella, and you're 30 and you're like 60, you want me to just work my way up like some schlub? No, I want crypto. I want to win the Powerball. I want to get a podcast. I want to be an influencer. Like I don't have time to wait and build a solid, strong, foundational career. Because that's not cool anymore. And that's not quick. It's neither cool nor quick. That's slow and boring. And I don't know if I don't want to be slow and boring. I want to be the hero again. So Trump, who I think is a creature of this, by the way, he is a social media. He's like, in a science fiction book that maybe will be written one day, he's like, if algorithms formed their own enforcer, if you know what I mean, like
Tron,
kind of like Tron meets like 2000, like evolution on super speed, where it's just like he is social media in like human form.
Yeah.
So he represents everything, which is big branding, no patience, no long term, no concern for others. It's just like what's hot, what'll get people riled up. And so I think the Epstein files, I'm not saying. People say there is no Epstein file, which is probably true. And in these right wing grifters have landed themselves in a pickle in terms of, well, you're either covering up or you lied. And they're trying to figure out how do we dupe our desperate to be heroes constituents into somehow forgetting that these things are mutually exclusive. Mm. How do we get them to a place where they go, no. There was an Epstein file. Biden destroyed it. Biden destroyed it. Of course. Why didn't we think of that before? Biden did. Probably had help from Obama and Clinton because he's so old. But on this one thing, he was sharp as a tack. Everything else, drooling at the mouth. But on this, cunning as a fox. And I think once the right wing figures out how to get these people aiming at a different villain, they will do that. And we will lose this brief moment of unity or at least not unity, but everything focused on the failings of Trump and his administration. So to sum it up, I think the Jeff Epstein seems like a terrible guy. I think people who hung and partied with him, awful people. I'm willing to, you know, condemn those people, at least on Earth. But once again, we're left with what do we do with this mass of people who want to be fooled? They want to be told, they want to be marks for Donald Trump. Like, that's the problem. Because, like my joke about the blue pill, red pill, they all talk about red pill. Fucking red pilled, bro. I see it now. No. They want the blue pill. That's the humor. They want the fucking blue pill. They think it's a red pill, but they just want Trump. Make me feel like I'm the best, even though I'm clearly not. Like, I had this brief moment where I had to face reality and I was super depressed doing fucking opioids, wondering if I was a worthless piece of shit. But then you showed up and told me it was the Mexicans' fault. So you gave me my my confidence back. You gave me false confidence. That's what Trump has done to these people. He will never demand hard work from them. He will never demand sacrifice or unity. He will demand worship and hate for the people that he tells you to hate. And the Epstein files is going to require a lot of magic from that maybe he doesn't possess. But how do you get these people off what appear to be mutually exclusive things? And once he does that, once he's able to do that, it will be another step in realizing we have to abandon 60 to 75 million people in this country. Not literally, just they are unreachables. I've called them the unreachables. They are done. And if he can spin them on this shit, that would be something. But I said this my friend Pete's podcast yesterday, but what if they don't buy it? I think they need Trump so bad at this point, like a drug. J.D. Vance, vice president, did at one point call him cultural heroin. Yes. Good call, VPJD. You were right. And that's exactly what and this is like the Epstein files is cultural fentanyl because it's going to somehow either destroy the movement or they're just going to be like, whatever. I don't even know. I'm doing this. I don't know how you take fentanyl up a suppository up the
you
ass.
You can like snort it.
You can snort it.
Yeah, okay. That's the problem that it's in cocaine a lot. That's what kills people.
Yeah, well, just say no. Sorry, guys. But no, that's what I'm saying is it's like fentanyl now. Now we're at this point where the high needs to be crazier to keep it going, that you didn't waste your time believing these conspiracy theories, that you just have to double down on the potency. And it's going to be an interesting time because I think Trump will survive this. And I do, side note, Dan Bongino, love that guy. Now he's playing grift. He's grifter. He's doing grifter chess right now because he's declared either I go or Pam Bondi goes. He's going to go. And then he's going to monetize being the guy who I had to leave. Now he's not going to say because of Trump, but he's going to say the elites and Pam Bondi. I was standing up for you. I wouldn't even back down to Trump's attorney general. My Patreon is right here. Please join.
Yeah.
So good for him. Good for him. I predict he'll get out of this the best.
Richer?
Richer. Yeah. He's a horrible human being, but he will get out of this much richer because I think he sees, first of all, he has no business being the deputy director of the FBI. Let's just get that one out. Cash Patel, okay, this guy. I wrote a kid's book about Trump. Cash Patel, I'm sorry if you know people who are cross-eyed or something.
No, I don't. I don't think I do.
I feel like I'm getting an ableist disappointment look.
Not from me.
But Bongino never belonged in that spot. It's a joke that he's there, but I think this is his exit. This will be a perfect exit strategy. Like, I don't know what I'm doing here. I shouldn't be here. I can monetize this into a book and more subscribers because Trump's not going to fire Pam Bondi, which will make you have to leave. Man, now I only make $10 million a year as the hero to the Epstein files people. But I will conclude with this. How we get out of this doesn't say anything about me or my people or Democrats or anything, truth be told. It will tell us either how the MAGA movement ends or how dangerous it is. Like there will be no, like it is either, and I mean, we already know it's dangerous, but I'm saying to anybody on the fence, whether you're a cool podcaster who's just looking for the guy who gets the most pussy, this will tell people how dangerous and how we should abandon them. Because a lot of people will say things like Bill Maher will often say, you can hate Trump, but you can't hate all the people who voted for him. Well, if 70 million people eat this shit up, I can hate them. I can disregard them. I can avoid them. I can consider them a tumor on American society and a shit stain in the books of American history. I can do that if they're willing to buy this. Like, who am I? Why do I have to try and convince these people to come back into the fold? They're gone. And this will just show either how gone they are or it will take down MAGA. So I look forward to seeing that. But obviously, we got to see the Epstein files, people. Got to release them. Got to. We'll be back with Comedy Talk. And we're back, everybody. Mike, how was that second break?
Better than the first one.
Okay.
Less good. Stressful.
Yeah. Because, you know, you didn't know where I was going with the Epstein files.
No. Well, I mean, I didn't, but I didn't even mean it like that. I just meant nothing. I didn't have to fix anything. There was no sound to fix. There was no video to fix.
Fair enough.
We're running smooth. This is our second recording at their apartment. We're still figuring out a lot of kinks. I don't know if people listened last time, but I did my best to get the air conditioner audio out. Scrub that out. So we're working on some stuff here. Like, it's not the smooth operation yet.
Okay, Sade. People told me they loved the clips, by the way.
The clips are done. They're done. They're on my computer.
With a new album also, I'm told.
Oh, okay.
Thank you. I thought you'd like that.
Now you're punning it up.
Well, when you insult Comedy Talk, you get puns. That's an old saying in my family. You mess with the bull, you get the puns. Punchdown of the week this week is an important one because I'm going to start tracking the more traditional punchdowns of the week, which is like, what you'd need here is this, or more like this. Those are your traditional punchdowns of the week where it's like, don't need you to add to the joke. And I give laugh emojis and credit when somebody does something funny. It's just very rare. You don't walk up to Mozart and give him notes. And if you do, they better be exquisite. So a guy wrote on Instagram on a video for mine that has gone kind of viral. 300,000 hits on Facebook in like 4 days and 130,000 plus on Instagram views. So he writes this guy, it's getting a lot of traction. This guy goes, besides the great impersonation, ooh, sounds like a compliment, which could use a little bit more pursing of the lips, I want to highlight the excellent script. Perfect for Trump a year ago. Oh. Maybe could use a little bit more word salad now. And of course, mentioning Biden three times. And maybe a comment on needing more gold leaf decor as Texas rebuilds. Okay. Now, there's a level of anger that I display to people when they go, but what about this? Or you should have said that. That gets a certain level of anger. You know, two to the head. But when we start going Michael Madsen, RIP,
yeah,
in the chair, dancing around, torturing you,
yeah,
is when you do this. Laying compliments only to get your look at my deep knowledge of Trump. Look at how much I know. This video was 59 seconds long. So unless you just want me to do a fucking checklist of items like, video's over. Sorry. But did I get everything?
Yeah.
So I replied because I don't. And some people thought somebody on Facebook was like, hey, man, this guy was basically just complimenting you. And you brought brought a hammer to him. And I said, I brought a hammer because it was too early in the morning for a sledgehammer. I said, I knew exactly what this guy was doing. And I'll tell you what I replied. Holy shit. What an annoying comment. For a 59-second video, I can't get in all the requirements for Oscar consideration in a 2-hour film. Please consider that I might know this and do this a lot better than you could ever conceive or execute. But it's a 59-second Instagram video. And it's quite transparent that your compliments are vehicles to try and demonstrate some deep perceptive insight to Trump and not really compliments. Please, for the love of God, my time, and everything else decent in the world, don't comment on my stuff or watch my stuff ever again. But besides that, What an excellent and perceptive comment. Now, Mike, we discussed before the show, and I know you're probably thinking, Dale, you spend too much time with this. This is too... Here's what I truly believe. If I have one remaining mission in comedy as a comedian, somebody has to fire the last shot in defense of art. Art is going to lose. The war is not over, but the war will not be won.
Yes.
And the question is, do you lay down your arms and accept your prison of content until you die? Or do you check everyone you can who talks their shit out of turn, disrespecting what an artist does? In the words of Nathan R. Jessup, Colonel Nathan R. Jessup, I would rather you just say thank you and be on your way. Either way, I don't give a damn what you think you're entitled to.
Another Jessup. Jessup sneaks into the show all the time.
When Aaron Sorkin's at his best, very few better.
Sure. I don't want to say too much here, but like, what I want for you and your mental health and your life after this is all over and comedy is all over is to just let the punchdown of the week dissipate from your psyche. Yeah. 'Cause I see what it does to you.
As I read my 48,000 page biography of Mark Twain by Ron Chernow, I of course see similarities between me and the great Twain.
Yes.
I often find when reading books about great artists that we share so much in common. And he was another, you know, non-sufferer of fools.
Yeah. Oh, he's for sure. Yeah.
And
big time.
I don't do it because it used to be, hey, man, maybe when I was happier, a lot more of these would slide off.
Yeah.
But I'm not just witnessing the end potentially of my own career. I'm witnessing something bigger. I'm witnessing people consuming free content and in real time devaluing it to my face, to me, to talk to me like you just saw something. And I'm sorry, and I've said this to Laura before, but when it comes to that's a nasty interruption. When I talk to Laura about this, and you can imagine how fucking bored she is.
Yeah, for the poor woman. God bless her.
I have said to her a few times, but I mean it. Whether people agree with me or not, normal, sane, intelligent people will. I do Trump. When you factor in voice, improv, volume, all the things that go into an impression, I'm the best. Not one of. Not pretty good. The best.
I agree.
The fucking goat.
Yeah.
And it is a special thing. Insignificant as it may be in the long term, I am, when you factor in every great presidential impersonator, no one's created more content of their target than me. If you just take from Rich Little to me.
Yes, that's actually probably true.
If you take Rich Little to me.
Yeah.
And no one's made less money.
Yeah. Because that's the thing, too. I don't think Rich Little wrote that much. Did he? Wasn't Rich Little like famously doing he was Nixon, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Wasn't he doing Nixon into like the 90s or something?
Well, I'm going to tell you a funny story. I was talking to emblematic of my career. I was talking to a person who wanted to manage me. The one inquiry I got all of 2020. And I was like, okay. And I was like, well, let's see what happens. Nothing happened. Spoiler. But he had a booking agent talk to me, you know, because you need a booking agent. And he was like, well, you got to strike. The guy's literally gone. I was like, yeah, you know, I got this Trump stuff. I got a lot of stuff. You know, I'm a somewhat accomplished comedian. I got a lot of work out there. And he said, yeah, well, you got to strike while the iron's hot because nobody's going to care about Trump in 6 months. I go, I didn't say this, but I was like, you're probably wrong, but I'd love that to be the case if I could get a step up and move on.
Yeah, right.
But I was like, but I think you're probably wrong on the, oh, Trump's not going to be.
This was the first time?
This was 6 months before January 6th this person said it. So it's like, ironically, he'll never be more talked about 6 months from now. And then he said this, and I kid you not, he said, nobody's really going to care about Trump in 6 months, so we should try to get you out as much as possible. I was like, okay. And he said, well, I got to run now. I'm in Vegas, headed to a rich little show. That's a true story.
Wow.
That's a true fucking story.
I got to be honest, not to disrespect the man. I did not know Rich Little was even still with us.
And I'm not, I mean, no disrespect to Rich Little at all. No, I'm saying, I can't get.
He's got to still be doing Nixon. There's no way he's not.
I'm I'm out here doing Giannis Antetokounmpo when it comes to presidential impersonation work.
Yeah.
And people are like, well, you're no Bob Cousy.
Yeah.
So get a day job, you fucking turd, because I'm watching Hacky Hack, please come back, dominate social media with his or his awful impersonation. So my point being, what was my point? I am, it is a fast, it is a fun thing to be able to say with, if not certainty, confidence, I do something the best. And I, you can bring up, you know, you can bring on challengers, but I think I really do. Mm-hmm. And if I'm not going to make $2 million a year on TV and private gigs and all that, you're certainly not going to come for my fucking integrity.
Yeah.
Because somebody has to have artistic integrity as this fucking ship goes down called art in society. Somebody has to be like, you're not taking that from me. And that's become the thing that has bothered me more is the less respect. And there's, don't get me wrong, you know this. There's plenty of people who are like, your work is great. Love your work. Cheers me up. It's so brilliant. So that you get all those. But when I see that disrespect, just like when I saw people calling me stealing from Sarah Cooper in 2020, people are like, why don't you just ignore it? And I said, not to quote Marlo from The Wire, but my name is my name.
Yeah.
And you're not, I care. I'm a comedian. I'm not a social media grifting fucking hack. You're not going to disrespect my work. You're not going to call me a cheat because where I come from, in my neighborhood, Mike, you call a guy a joke thief, you got a problem. But I mean that in all seriousness. Like you don't, you can call some people now thieves, hacks, they'll go, well, I'm a content creator. Yeah, totally. I don't come from that era.
Yep.
So that's why I fight. And I know it's not the healthiest thing. I'm not pretending like it is, but there's a reason beyond a hair trigger temper that I do this. It's because nobody, and I mean nobody, comes into our gym and pushes us around. So special. To review, why yeah. didn't I drag down a special while I'm talking about uplifting art? Wouldn't that be the height of irony?
Well,
I watched a special on Netflix. I'm always out there searching for new talent.
Sure.
So I saw a guy I haven't heard of, Nate Jackson. His special is called Super Funny, and it's on Netflix. If you're keeping track at home, the four since I brought the show back, I've done a special from each from a different platform. Sprinkling it around. So Netflix, Nate Jackson. Now, the last time I watched a husky black comedian I'd never heard of, it was Brian Simpson in 2024, and it was a top three special for me. He was like a guy kind of affiliated with Rogan, loosely like as a guy who does shows with him. Incredible special. So I was like, oh. So I said, will lightning strike twice for husky black guy I've never heard of from who has a huge Netflix special? Because it was like top 10 for the week. Now, I don't know. Now, the guy starts with 20 to 25 minutes of what I would say are generic material. I'm not laughing. Some of the crowd's enjoying it. A lot of middle-aged white people in the crowd, which you don't necessarily see for a husky, younger black dude who says the N-word casually.
Okay.
But then I didn't do my research because I didn't want to do the research to like say, where did he come from? I wanted to kind of guess from the material. I said, this is a guy who's a stand-up comic. This doesn't feel like a guy who just started doing stand-up comedy 2 years ago.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it feels like a guy who owes his success to social media habits and algorithms because he then did crowd work, like crowd descriptions, kind of like D.L. Hughley used to do, but it felt more organic. Mm. He did, but he talked about how he was going to do crowd work for like 12 minutes. So as the saying goes, you never want to see how the crowd work gets made.
Right.
And by the end of it, I actually fell asleep for the last 3 minutes. I just fell asleep on my couch and it was the middle of the afternoon. But I watched it and I said, this is a step back. It's not to say this guy isn't like proficient, like that he doesn't know what he's doing, but artistically. And you don't have to break the mold. You don't have to do things we've never seen. Like Brian Simpson's special, just as a comparison, he wasn't doing anything that I'd like, oh my God, this guy's changing the game. It was just like, this guy's really funny and his material is material I've never heard. This was very like, this is one of those, the gatekeepers don't matter anymore, but the gatekeepers might've kept you out possibly because they're like, heard it, seen it, moving on. But if you reach enough people, if you reach millions of people who are like, I've never been to do comedy. Is that how you say it? But I love this guy's videos. That's what it felt like. I could be wrong, but I just felt like I spent an hour watching, the future in an odd way, the future of comedy, which felt like a setback. Mm. So I don't know if I've mentioned it yet since we've been back together, Mike, but I have a special on Amazon Prime called Half Blackface. Can I share with you before we go, Mike, one quick story?
Sure.
Very quick.
Sure, sure.
I go to Long Island. I got banned from all the clubs in Long Island.
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, it was, you know, because two tables of alpha male comedy fans didn't like the 3 minutes of Trump material. So they complained like alpha male patriots would.
Right.
And nothing more masculine in American than being a Karen. I call those men trans Karens. And I'm sure they'd like that. But I booked my own gig in Long Island. So sold poorly, of course. But of the close to 40 people in a small room, I broke even. My opener made more than me. That's how it goes.
Yeah.
But I asked, as I was starting the set, I said, hey, this is an audience of 38 fans. Uh-huh. Not, oh, I just wandered into this place. I don't know what's happening. Like, I'll see some comedy. 38 of 38 are self-identifying followers, fans, consumers of what I do. So I said, just out of curiosity, I'm going to do a part of a joke, but I can do the first part. It's like a continuation of a joke I had, but I'll do both. If not, has anybody seen my special Half Blackface? Now, if like 20 people clap, I go, okay, I'll skip the first part. Two people. And that was actually a moment for me where I said, one of the biggest things I've ever had as a comedian, and I'm super proud of it. That's less than 3% of self-identifying fans watched my free stand-up special on a major platform. Oh boy. I hope 6 to 8 months from now, a job opportunity arises for me that allows me to help people so I can get out of this place. But guys, I appreciate you watching or listening. Please do both. I say this all the time. I don't think you'll do it, but share. Share with a friend. If they're politically minded like you or they like the comedy that you like, I don't want to be a secret. If I'm doing this, it's because I want you to share. I may pull back from other things, but I'm not doing this as a secret or as like, this is between you and me. No, let's share it. Share with the world. And please leave a 5-star review on your on Spotify and or Apple. I hope you subscribe to my YouTube. I'm closing in on 100,000 subscribers. And check out my calendar, Newark, Astoria, Queens, and St. Catharines, Ontario. So get those tickets for those shows. Hope to see you there. I will probably have more shows, but most importantly, I got that new job, and that is all jokes aside, all misery aside. I hope I can do work that I'm proud of and that helps people. Because it'll be a good change of pace from giving yourself to people and feeling like dog shit, which is the comedy way. This way I'd be doing things and helping people and leaving work, maybe feeling good about myself. That would be interesting for a change. So let's see how that works. And until then, see you next Thursday.